This is the introduction for Decatur, Part 1.
Hello, this is Atah Durakan with the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, August 13th. We begin our reading on the front page with the Decatur Schools article, Final Countdown, Decatur Staff Ready, Schools for First Day. This article is from Decatur by Valerie Wells. The Buildings and Grounds Department of the Decatur School District has been working 7 days a week for more than a month to complete their summer projects. At first, we just worked 40 hours a week, and I thought I'd see how that went, said Steve Klein, Director of Buildings and Grounds. With so many projects underway because of the district's BOLD, which stands for Building Better Opportunities for Learning in Decatur, plan, and the first day of school upon them, the maintenance staff has been working overtime, literally. Thomas Jefferson closed as a middle school at the end of the 2018-2019 school year as part of the BOLD plan, which combines the two middle schools at the Stephen Decatur building. The merger is part of the first phase of the facilities plan, which would reduce the number of buildings from 22 to 17 over the course of several years. It would also add air conditioning at all buildings and increase the capacity for some of the most popular programs. To complete the work this summer, Klein said he initially added only Saturdays in the hopes that enough work would get completed to keep them on schedule, but then he also added Sundays. Both weekend days are optional for maintenance staff, and usually about half of them work each of the weekend days. Klein said the work at Stephen Decatur has all been done entirely with district staff, including building block walls that blend seamlessly with the existing walls, installing new ceilings and floors, reconfiguring large rooms into smaller rooms, moving offices, moving outdated furniture and electronics out for resale or recycling, and building the two project-based learning areas in the Galleria. With the first day of school set for Wednesday, the pressure is on, and some things just aren't going to be finished in time. We've got the teachers coming in today, Klein said Monday. They haven't seen any of this, and they're all running around like it's so exciting. One of those teachers, Penny Jones, who was at Thomas Jefferson Middle School last year and has moved to Stephen Decatur along with the other teachers and students from Thomas Jefferson, said she was impressed with the amount of work the department had done. These guys are awesome, she said. They've worked so hard. A major benefit of having a highly skilled buildings and ground staff, Klein said, is that the district saves the expense of hiring outside contractors to do the work. With 34 employees on staff who have the carpentry, electrical, plumbing, and other experience to do almost any remodeling and repair, including an automotive service excellence certified mechanic, nearly everything can be done by district employees. I've talked to other districts, and their maintenance staff can only change light bulbs and strip wax floors, Klein said. Decatur's staff won't have to worry about floors at Stephen Decatur eventually. The carpet is being replaced a little at a time with vinyl flooring. Klein orders the supplies for stripping, buffing, and waxing, and it's expensive upkeep with traditional floors. The carpet, which has been replaced once since the building was new in 1976, needs to be replaced again. So rather than do that, the Buildings and Grounds Department is replacing one room at a time with the environmentally friendly vinyl floor. It resists spills and scuffs and will never need buffing or waxing, Klein said. But that project is not as high a priority as completing the other tasks, which have to be ranked in order of immediate needs. Klein can't take more than a few steps before one of his staff or a teacher at the building stops him to ask for things they want and need. They don't have a whiteboard yet, or their Apple TV hasn't been installed. And while those things are important, Klein said, other things have to take higher priority right now. You have to let them know you care without getting sidetracked, Klein said. Other projects this summer, which took staff away from Stephen Decatur to complete, including remodeling at Hope Academy, installing air conditioning at Pershing Early Learning Center and Enterprise School, and remodeling at Harris School, which will be the district's alternative learning center, housing both the Special Education Alternative Program and Phoenix Academy. Thanks to the largely dry weather, Klein said, he pulled some of his mowing crew members in to help with projects, as they didn't have to mow as often. Everyone is pulled together to get things done, he said. Some photos that accompany this article. Some rooms have been repurposed at Stephen Decatur Middle School. This classroom used to be an area for wrestling and wood shop, and it looks like the drop ceiling with a some gentlemen doing work here on lots of wires. Ken Fulton, an employee with the Decatur Public Schools Building and Grounds Department, finishes up drywall in one of the project-based learning rooms at Stephen Decatur Middle School on Monday. Seventh grade science instructor Wendy Ragsdale prepares one of Stephen Decatur Middle School's science rooms. School starts Wednesday. This is a beautiful room. Very long. Looks like some vinyl flooring made to look like wood. Very long cabinets, wide open, bright space. Very nice. And there's a sidebar here. Facilities plan timeline. August 2019, Stephen Decatur has combined with Thomas Jefferson to host one middle school campus. Harris Elementary combined with Hope Academy. More comprehensive K-12 alternative school and special education alternative program relocate to Harris. Air conditioning installed at Enterprise and Pershing schools. And in August 2020, Enterprise and Garfield Montessori schools combine and move to the renovated Thomas Jefferson facility. Construction to South Shores addition and air conditioning. French STEM Academy moves to Enterprise. Dennis School absorbs Mary Kay French Building, making Dennis a two-facility school. Durfee projected to close, tentative based on construction timelines. August 2021, New Johns Hill Building opens, South Shores addition complete with air conditioning. Combine Muffley and Baum at Muffley Campus and air conditioning. Combine Franklin and Oak Grove at Franklin Campus and air conditioning. And finally, combine Parsons and Stevenson at Parsons Campus and air conditioning. All right, let's see here. We move on to the first responders. Woman so grateful for rescue workers. Pair of Assumption first responders honored as heroes. This article's by Tony Reed from Assumption. As cold floodwaters poured into her sinking vehicle and rose to clutch at her throat, Misty Dorlew thought she was doomed. The 50-year-old Decatur woman heading home the evening of June 22nd from her factory job in Shelbyville had driven into a flooded section of County Highway 16 Tower Hill Blacktop, 5 miles east of Assumption. "I believed I was going to die," Dorlew recalled Monday. Her sport utility vehicle had floated off the road and began to sink in more than 6 feet of swirling dark water. "It was one of the scariest days of my life." But her desperate cell phone pleas for help had been answered, and on Monday night, the two heroes who swam to her rescue were honored. Assumption Police Officer Peter H. Zeitler III and Assumption Fire Department Firefighter James A. Rocliffe were both presented with plaques and medals honoring their bravery from their respective services. The presentation took place in Assumption at a meeting of the city's police committee where a celebratory cake had been prepared honoring the two men, and Durlew spoke, fighting back welling tears. "I know you guys don't feel like you are heroes, but to me you are more than that," and the mother of four and grandmother said the mother of four and grandmother of ten. "I'm so grateful for what you both did for me. You went out of your way to save my life without regard for your own life or safety, and I can never thank you both enough." Recalling the dramatic rescue, Rocliffe, a firefighter for 22 years, said both he and Zeitler swam out to the car. Zeitler used his baton to smash the rear window and pull Durlew free. She was terrified because she can't swim, and Rocliffe then took hold of her and swam them both to the nearest dry land about 100 feet from the now sunken vehicle. "I'm 5'11", and I'd say the water was more than 6 feet deep," recalled Rocliffe, 51. "It would have been above my head." Zeitler, 25, a patrolman for a little more than a year, said the rescue went smoothly and both men worked well together to get the job done as fast as possible. "I like to think I'm a strong swimmer, but anyway, it worked out well that day," he said. Congratulating them both, Assumption Police Chief Brian Wade said they were fine examples of the brave men and women across the world who put on a uniform and a badge to set out to help others. The common factor is they choose to do so, and they choose to serve others, he said. And they did so without regard to their personal safety. And we have some state news here. Medical marijuana, Ashley's Law, expanded by Peter Hancock from Capital News, Illinois, in Springfield. Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker celebrated a pair of new laws Monday that expanded the state's medical marijuana programs, including one that gives students more options for taking the drug at school. As we continue to reform the state government so that it better serves its families, we must do so in a way that advances dignity, empathy, opportunity, and grace. In each of these things, this legislation moves us forward, Pritzker said at a bill signing ceremony in Springfield. One of the bills expands a 2018 law known as Ashley's Law, which authorizes schools to allow parents, guardians, or other caregivers to administer cannabis-infused products to a student who is authorized to use medical marijuana. The law is named after Ashley Surin, a Schaumburg student who uses marijuana-based products to manage a seizure disorder she developed at age 3 while undergoing chemotherapy to treat cancer she had since age 2. She won the right to use marijuana-infused products at school in a federal court battle that was decided in January 2018. We're so proud of her, and we're so happy this program is continuing and expanding because it's like a miracle that our daughter is doing so well, and I can't wait to see what she does next, Ashley's mother Maureen Surin said during the ceremony. Since enactment of the first medical marijuana law in Illinois in 2013, Pritzker noted more than 80,000 patients across the state have received authority to use medical marijuana to treat certain medical conditions. Under Senate Bill 455, which takes effect January 1st, schools will be required to allow a school nurse or administrator to administer cannabis-infused products to a student who is a registered qualifying patient. It also allows students to self-administer the medication under the direct supervision of a nurse or school administrator, and it expands a student's access to the drug to include before and after school activities. Pritzker also noted the signing of a Senate Bill 2023, which he actually signed Friday, expanding and making permanent the medical cannabis pilot program, which was scheduled to sunset next year. Among other things, it adds 11 conditions for which a person may use medical cannabis, including autism, chronic pain, migraines, osteoarthritis, and anorexia nervosa. It also allows qualifying veterans access to medical marijuana as part of an opioid alternative pilot program. It also expands the list of medical professionals who can certify patients to use medical marijuana beyond medical doctors to include advanced practice registered nurses and physician assistants. The bill further requires state regulators to award any remaining medical marijuana dispensary licenses under the same competitive application review rules that apply under the new adult recreational marijuana law, meaning additional points are awarded to social equity applicants who come from high crime or high poverty neighborhoods, or applicants who have previously been arrested or convicted of minor marijuana offenses that are now eligible for expungement. This is yet another piece of legislation that expands equity across our state, Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton said. By making the medical cannabis program permanent, expanding access to veterans, and expanding the list of medical conditions, we are ensuring that families all across our state have access to the health care that they deserve. And we move on to page A3, local and state police search for man who skipped bail. Skinner facing animal cruelty charge after dog found beaten. Tony Reed wrote this article from Decatur. Dalton C. Skinner, the Decatur man who police said beat his pet pit bull and left it with bleeding wounds, dumped in a bathtub, has been convicted of skipping his bond and ordered to pay a $4,000 judgment. Decatur police and the Macon County Sheriff's Office are continuing their search for Skinner, who entered a plea of not guilty to a charge of aggravated cruelty to animals when he appeared April 3rd in Macon County Circuit Court. He was freed on $4,000 bond but hasn't been seen. A warrant for the 21-year-old's arrest was issued by Judge Thomas Griffith May 7th. The bond judgment against Skinner was entered in another court hearing August 2nd in a $400 payment he had made previously, 10% down to secure the $4,000 bond, was ordered forfeited. The aggravated cruelty to animals charge remains to be heard. First Assistant Macon County State's Attorney Nicole Kroenke said proceedings will wait until Skinner is taken into custody. The cruelty charge dates to March 13th when Skinner was arrested after police arrived at his home in the 1600 block of North College Street. Officers say they were responding to reports he was killing a brindle-colored pit bull inside the residence, according to a sworn affidavit from Decatur police. The affidavit said Skinner had opened the front door with shaking, blood-spattered hands and led Officer Anna Oldham to where the female pit bull lay in a bathtub full of urine and droplets of blood. Oldham described the dog as having a makeshift bandage tied around its head while it bled profusely from a wound to its neck and a hole in the top of its head. One of the dog's eyes was swollen shut, and Oldham and Skinner described beating the dog while holding screws and metals in his fist, which he said may have inflicted some of the wounds. The dog had been removed and taken for emergency treatment by the Macon County Animal Control and Care Center. Speaking to the Herald and Review on Monday, Chief Warden Chris Horton said the dog had made a full recovery. She had stayed at the facility for several weeks while being treated and then had been rapidly adopted by a new family. "She's gone to a great home and was just a sweet dog," added Horton. "No matter what has happened to her, she remained a sweet, sweet dog." Anyone with information about Skinner's whereabouts can contact Decatur Macon County Area Crime Stoppers at 217-423-8477. Police: Man threatens onlookers in Mount Zion, by Tony Reed from Mount Zion. Police said they arrested a Mount Zion man Sunday morning after he performed burnouts in the road with his car and then threatened onlookers with a handgun. The 47-year-old man was taken into custody at 11:55 a.m. and booked on preliminary charges of aggravated unlawful use of a weapon and aggravated assault. Preliminary charges are subject to review by the state attorney's office. A sworn affidavit from Mount Zion Police Patrolman John Landecker said police had been called to the 1400 block of Westside Drive at 9:45 a.m. after residents complained of a vehicle performing burnouts in the highway. Landecker said onlookers described the driver as being aggressive, giving them the middle finger. During a verbal altercation with a victim, the man brandished a 9mm or 40 caliber semi-automatic handgun and asked the witness if the witness wanted some of this, said Landecker. The witness stated he did not point the firearm at him, but rather had it in his right hand outside the driver's door, with the muzzle pointed down at the ground. Another witness had snapped a picture of the man's vehicle, including its registration, and police soon traced it to the man's Mount Zion home address. Landecker said the man admitted to doing at least one burnout due to his clutch slipping, and also admitted flipping off witnesses. Landecker said the man has a valid concealed carry permit and admitted he had a weapon with him in the car, although there was no comment listed in the affidavit on the allegations of threatening people with the firearm. The man is free after posting $10,000 bond set by a judge. Prosecutors had asked for $20,000. Court documents have him scheduled for arraignment September 13th. And we move on to the Illinois Waterways section on this page. Study suggests Asian carp may adapt to Lake Michigan. This article is by Tony Briscoe from the Chicago Tribune, Chicago. Invasive fish in Illinois waterways has not yet reached the Great Lakes. As Asian carp have stormed up the Illinois River in the past several decades, looming precariously close to Lake Michigan, scientists have been forced to ponder an alarming question. What if the invasive species actually breached the world's fifth largest lake? Many fishery managers have already resigned themselves to the fact that bighead and silver carp, the two most feared species of Asian carp, may never be eradicated from Illinois waterways as a single female can lay over 1 million eggs each year. These insatiable fish have proved capable of eating 120% of their body weight in a day, mostly microscopic plankton, the base of the aquatic food chain. In doing so, they deprive other fish while growing to as much as 100 pounds by adulthood, much too large for any native predator to feed on them. However, since the 1990s, invasive species such as zebra and quagga mussels have devoured so much of Lake Michigan's plankton that some experts have wondered whether Asian carp would be able to survive if they arrived there. Even if they could, some believe the carp would be limited to areas near shore where plankton is still plentiful, instead of open water, which has essentially become a food desert. A new University of Michigan-led study has turned that thinking on its head. The research, published Monday in Freshwater Science, suggests that bighead carp in particular could fare a lot better than expected in Lake Michigan because scientists have underestimated the flexibility of their diet. In addition to plankton, the opportunistic eaters can sustain themselves by feeding on the feces and mucus-coated regurgitation of invasive mussels. By factoring in the luxuriant layer of mussel excrement that has accumulated on the floor of Lake Michigan, the new computer models show the entire lake would provide suitable habitat for bighead carp at certain times of the year. The significance of open water being suitable, but not necessarily high-quality habitat, is that it could be a migration corridor these fish could travel across while seeking out more productive areas, said study leader Peter Alsip, who conducted the research for his master's thesis at U of M's School of Environment and Sustainability. So they might be able to manage or mitigate their weight loss, which could facilitate their spread until they get to areas where they can be fat and happy, like Green Bay. And we move on to the next article, Decatur Group among finalists for State Farm Grant. Online voting to determine winners runs August 14th. Through 23rd. This is by the Herald and Review News Service from Decatur. Two Central Illinois groups, including one in Decatur, are among 200 nationwide finalists for $25,000 State Farm grants. In line for the Neighborhood Assistant grants are Mobile Food Pantry of Northeast Community Fund in Decatur and the Olympia Paysetters 4-H Hungry Ambassadors and Emergency Mini Food Pantries of Helping Hands Community Center in Stamford in McLean County. Winners are determined by online voting, which runs August 14th through 23rd, for people who are 18 or older with a valid email address. The finalists, which were called from among 2,000 applicants, 19 of the finalists are from Illinois. In addition to Decatur and Stamford, 11 finalists are from Chicago, with one each from Danville, Jacksonville, McHenry County, Melrose Park, Rockford, and Springfield. Voters are allowed up to 10 votes a day, which can be applied to a single cause or spread among favorites. The top 40 causes will be announced September 25th at neighborhoodassist.com. That website is also where votes may be made. The awards benefit causes that would make a positive impact on their neighborhoods, according to a statement issued by the Bloomington-based insurer. Previous winners have included the Twin Cities Promise Council and Good Samaritan Inn of Decatur. And there's a photo here. Volunteer Tracy Grimm packs a food basket for a recipient in need at the Northeast Community Fund in this 2017 file photo. I forgot to mention in the previous article about Asian carp, there's a really great picture of dozens of fish leaping out of the water and a shoreline photo in the background. But in the upper right, there is a fish with its tail curled, and it's a little blurry because it's out of focus because the focus is on the background with the fish jumping. But 2012 file photo, Asian carp jolted by an electric current from a research boat jumped from the Illinois River near Havana during a study on the fish's population. And we move on to the last article on this page. It's under the Briefly section. Registration for Employment Skills Class Wednesday at Decatur Library. from Decatur. Registration for the Workforce Investment Solutions Math and Employment Skills class will be 1 p.m. Wednesday, August 14th in the Adult Education area of the Decatur Public Library. Students will be able to brush up on math skills while learning about jobs in the fields of manufacturing and transportation. Plan to spend 2 hours on the registration process. Child care is not available. Call 217-875-7211. Let's do that again. Call 217-875-7211, extension 6264. We move on to the news section, page A5 here. Man arrested in traitor spray painting incidents. This article is by Scott Perry from Decatur. A 35-year-old man was arrested Sunday night in connection with the spray painting of variations of the word traitor on several buildings in Decatur, including the lobby of the Decatur Police Department and the west entry doors of the Macon County Courthouse. It marked the second time the man was arrested in 2 days, Decatur Police Sergeant Chris Copeland said. The suspect was arrested Friday night for breaking out the windows of the Decatur Bicycle Shop, 1230 East Pershing Road, which also was vandalized on Sunday, Copeland said. In an interview with the Herald and Review, Scott Magruder, an owner of the store, said the suspect became upset after being told on Friday that he owed for a bike he had previously taken from the store. The exchange, which Magruder said involved verbal threats against him and his staff, came after a year of doing business with the man. Magruder said the suspect was told after making payment for the bike that he was no longer welcome in the business. The windows were broken later, he said. Magruder also said cable and internet lines to his business were cut and the locks filled with glue. According to a sworn police affidavit, police video surveillance captured the suspect painting traitor on the glass between the main lobby and front office of the headquarters building at 6:48 p.m. Sunday. Among the identifying articles of clothing was a black one-piece spandex bike uniform with DBS, Decatur Bicycle Shop, printed on it, the affidavit said. According to the affidavit, video surveillance at the courthouse captured images of the same person painting the same word on the doors there at 7:07 p.m. Sunday. The Decatur Bicycle Shop had the words "Traitor Scott" written on the plywood boards covering the damage to the storefront, the affidavit said. It should be noted that on August 9, 2019, the suspect was arrested for having damaged the windows which the boards were covering. The affidavit noted the suspect told police he was upset with Magruder, and this is why he damaged the windows. Among the other buildings targeted with graffiti were the Enta Allergy Head and Neck Institute on the Decatur Memorial Hospital campus and Heritage Behavioral Health at 151 North Main Street, Copeland said. According to the affidavit, a woman flagged down a Decatur police officer with information about the painting of traitor matrix on its east doors and supplied a similar description of the suspect. Surveillance video also captured images of the suspect in the parking lot of the Enta building, the affidavit said. The suspect was taken into custody by Decatur police at an apartment in the 3700 block of Portage Place in Decatur on preliminary charges of criminal defacing of property, criminal damage to government property, and criminal trespass. Preliminary charges are subject to review by the state's attorney's office. Copeland said the suspect may also be linked to graffiti discovered on two other buildings, Macon Resources at 2121 Hubbard Avenue and Crossing Healthcare at 320 Central Avenue, as well as an investigation into glue being placed in the locks of Decatur Bicycle Shop. Well, that very quickly brings us to the end of the first half hour. Please stay tuned as we return very soon with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, August 13th, 2019.